Strangers in the Wood is an actual play series drawing elements from gothic fairy tales and 80s fantasy and sci-fi action and horror films. As such, a list of content warnings will always be made available in the description. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another very special episode of Tales Yet Told. I guess, is this still Strangers in the Wood?
I would say so, because it's in the same world.
Yeah. I'm just trying to imagine when I title this episode, is it going to be Strangers in the Wood something, or is it going to be a different title? I don't know.
Yeah. Although maybe all of the tales that we will tell are in the same world.
Don't spoil it. Ooh.
Big tales yet told cinematic.
Podcastic.
Auditory universe.
The auditory universe of Tales Yet Told. I feel like if we're a couple of years down the line and we find a way to tie it all together, that would be amazing.
If we could do it, that would be pretty amazing. Because so far with like, well, with the ideas we have for the future, it would get pretty wild.
It would be insane for us to find a way to tie it all together. It would be crazy. But if we could find a way to do it and like have it actually be kind of good, I'm down for it.
It would be brilliant.
Right. But yes, welcome to another very special episode of Strangers in the Wood. I am your humble host and game master, Kendrick Smith, or Kendo if you prefer. I use he, they pronouns. And with me today is my wonderful co-host and player, Gus.
Is this a question?
No.
Are you unsure?
No, I'm quite sure.
Okay. Hi, I'm Gus. I use he, him pronouns. I'm excited to do this. We're about to explore something that we've like talked about doing this for a while, and like,
yeah, we really have.
We have not gotten to it, but now we're doing it.
Yeah,
I'm excited.
We've scheduled this recording session like 4 or 5 times, and every time something has come up. Either I was sick, you were sick, I had work, you had work. Like something was always happening.
Yep.
But it's finally time.
It's time.
For our listeners, if you can't tell, it's just the two of us today. Look at that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
None of those other punks, you know, clogging up the the airwaves or whatever.
Clogging up the waveform.
Yeah, it's just everyone's favorites. I don't want to say that.
Whoa.
That's mean.
Whoa.
That's mean.
Hey, come on.
Edit that out.
I'm not going to edit it out.
Yeah, I know. It's funny.
It's funny. So yeah, it's just the two of us today. Instead of our usual game of Babes in the Wood, we're playing a different game today as we are exploring something a little different. Still taking place in the same world as Strangers in the Wood, taking place in the Sublime. We are today kind of narrowing our kind of focus on something that has happened in the past. More specifically, Walter's past.
Yeah, I think they probably could have guessed that, given that I'm here.
Okay, well, you know, I'm trying to just trying to be a good host. But yeah, so yeah. Today we're going to be exploring a bit of the history of Walter, more specifically the history of Walter's transformation and his time at the Sublime School for Lost Children. Yeah, as Gus said, you know, this is something that you and I have, you know, talked about off mic, you know, quite a bit. Yeah. To a certain degree, trying to figure out, you know, who Walter is, where he came from, what his experience was like. But I think to a certain degree, we've still always been kind of vague about certain things where we've just kind of left it open because we weren't quite sure how certain things worked or what certain things were like.
Yeah.
And I want us to use this time to be able to make more specifics and being able to like see that narrative play out through us engaging in a new game, a game that is very specifically kind of about transformation in a way. So the game that we are playing is Abnormal by Avery Alder, wonderful game designer. Most people have heard of their work. You know, The Quiet Year, Dream Askew, Monster Hearts 2, God, Variations on Your Body. So amazing work. A wonderful game designer. Very thoughtful in her approach on game design and like the kinds of games that she makes. So I'm very excited to play this, really. Abnormal is very specifically a game about body horror and the way that, you know, body horror breaks down the lines between like what we understand about our body and the world around us and like the ways in which this kind of transformation into the horror can alienate ourselves from both ourselves and the people around us in ways that I think is really interesting and I think is very true about the human to animal transformations that happen in the Sublime. For the audience, like we just finished an arc with both you and Rose, two people who have gone through this transformation.
Yeah.
And Rose seemingly like only partially, like Rose is not even a fully transformed animal, somewhere like kind of paused in the middle. And like you and I have talked about like what like that is like and like the kind of horror behind that, and I'm really excited about us, you know, exploring the moments in which these things are happening.
Yeah, I think in that last arc we got a lot of, you know, Walter being very empathetic towards Rose, and I think this will give us a good chance to really get into, you know, why he sort of feels that level of empathy.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I especially think it'll give us a little bit of insight into maybe why Rose acts in the way that she does. I think one of the great bits of drama that comes out of that arc is like both your empathy for it, but also Dorothy's not even like lack of empathy, just like the truly like not understanding Rose as an entity or like a person in like action, like having to deal with the fact that both Rose is a person and partially a monster, quote unquote, like however we want to, you know, frame what a monster is, right? At what point does a person no longer a person in the eyes, you know, of society or another person? I think is a lot of what I wanted to get into in that arc overall, and I think that this game will help us expand on that a little bit more.
Yeah, I think that'd be good.
Yeah. So let's talk about this game before we get into more of like trying to shape what the setting of this is going to be like and such. So this game has three roles. First role is the witness, that is the main character, a person slowly being consumed by a horrific force and whose grip on reality is likely unraveling. That is you, Walter.
Mm-hmm.
There is the horror. The horror begins with a single manifestation though will likely spread, develop new manifestations, and begin to overwhelm the witness. That shall be me.
You've always been the horror in my mind, Kendo.
Yeah, aw, thank you. I try to live up to it. And then the third role is the support role. The support are people in the witness's life who will help them maintain a grip on reality. And so with these three roles, we are playing with two players. This is a game that can either be played one player or one to three players. With two players, the first player takes on the role of the witness. The second player takes on the role of the horror. And the two players share the support role, trading off on being the support player based on whatever makes sense at the time. So we'll be able to, you know, kind of figure out, you know, who is best to play who, as, you know, as we get into the game.
Sure.
Move on to the next page. Setup. At the start of the game, the witness is holding their life together, but a hint of an untenability exists. There are two support characters in the witness's life, but those relationships might be waning or problematic. And into this, Milou, the horror, enters with its first manifestation. The witness player starts by picking two facets of the witness's life to describe out of work life, sex life, which we probably won't do because Walter is a minor.
Yeah.
Home life and social life. And then for each of the selected facets, you're going to choose two descriptors below that describe it and tell me about it. And then, you know, there's a list of things here that those facets could be. It could be monotonous, unprecedented, satisfying, strained, rich, vulgar, esteemed, timid, or temporary. And I imagine you can also, you know, come up with your own words, ways to describe things if you would like.
Yeah. So would you agree that in this case, Walter's work life is school.
Yeah.
This is school life.
Yeah. I would say that.
I'm going to go with, so I picked two facets for it.
Yeah. So you're going to, yeah. Yeah. You're correct.
So for his school life, or his work life, school life, whatever. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do monotonous.
Fair.
And strained.
Okay. And then what's the second one?
I'm going to go with his social life.
Ooh, okay.
And I think... I think I want to do timid.
Timid.
And unprecedented.
Interesting. Okay. Cool. Let's expand on this a little bit because I'm interested in the descriptors you chose. So let's start off with work and school life. I guess in general, this is a thing that like I have only like kind of thought about, and I'm really interested in your take on this. What do you think school life is? Like, what do you think the school day consists of at the Sublime School for Lost Children?
You know, I imagine there's a good chunk of it that is just normal school.
Okay.
That is like, you know, that is math and other subjects, you know?
Like
you know,
like, yeah, like English and
math and English and
history? What is,
would there be history?
Yeah,
though?
What is history? Is history class like History of the Sublime? I don't know what that looks like. Maybe not.
But then yeah, and then I was also gonna say that I think there would be a good chunk of it that is how to live in the sublime.
Yeah.
You know, how to have a part in this world.
Yeah, part of the way that I was thinking about it is I think there's a certain amount of schooling. So we've already established that there are three schools or three classes within the school. So there's the brown class, which are the people who don't fall into the roles or not, you know, not following the rules, so on and so forth. And there is the blue class and the green class. The green class are the younger students, I believe I've said before. where they are the kids from maybe like about Dakota's age, maybe a little younger, so like 14 and under, where they are young enough to still be like malleable and like figuring out what their role is. And then like once you get into blue class, you're essentially given, school becomes just like specialized training for whatever your role is going to be, I feel, on top of you know, schooling. I think we're seeing Walter at a time where he would still be young enough to be in the green class. Do you think that's true?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Yeah, because I know we've said that Walter was 15 when he entered the Sublime. Or he's 15 now. We've been very vague about, like, the age of Walter.
We have not established really how time works.
Yeah, time to me and the Sublime can be a little tricky, I would imagine.
Yeah.
And so...
And, you know, like, I'm okay with just kind of leaving it at that. How does time work? It's tricky.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think we have to be very specific about it. I think there's lots of things about the way that the Sublime works that I am okay leaving as a question mark on the board. Where it's like, I'm not quite sure. And I don't think any answer we come up with, especially like right now off the cuff, is going to be very interesting. As it's like not engaging with, you know, anything that we're actively doing in the game. I think any answer that we come up with while we're playing that actively engages with whatever we're doing is going to be more interesting than us right now being like, he's been here 5 years, but he hasn't aged because, like, you know, I don't imagine it being terribly interesting in that way.
Yeah.
So Walter is generically 15. was 15 when he entered, not quite sure what he is right now. And so in that case, I mean, if he is 15, do you think he's in green class or blue class? Because he's very much on the cusp where he could be in either.
I think, I think he could have been in either. I think he could have.
I think what the difference here is going to be, and I think the difference in general is that over the course of however many years someone is in green class, I think there is a long form assessment of a person's skills, their personality, so that those roles tend to be more refined for a person, if that makes sense. Sure. Where it's like, okay, we've been watching you for a long time, this is you. While if you are old enough and you end up going to the school and you're like old enough for blue class, they do a very quick assessment and it's like, okay, here's your role based on that. And I think that process might be like harder for a lot of people to get through.
I think that's probably what happened. I think he sort of fell into, you know, like just past the sort of cutoff, and they were like, oh, we can't spend a long time, you know, assessing this kid. We gotta get him a role.
Yeah, I like that. Okay, cool. So when you say that your school life is monotonous and strained, how do you imagine that? What about it is monotonous and what about it is strained?
I think monotonous comes from the fact that it is school.
Fair. Very fair.
And he's never been the like really eager to learn type. You know, he's always been the type to, you know, do the busy work and then just get out of there and just, you mm-hmm. know, do his own thing. Strained, I think, comes from that, like, that subtle difference between, you know, school in our world and school in the Sublime, mm-hmm. where it is, you know, for the first time, he's really being taught stuff that he can't really just vibe with, you know, that he can't just, like, get through and be done with it. Yeah, I think that's what it is the aspect of, like, oh, I'm, like, you're never done with this. You know, this isn't something you do and you're done. This is like,
this is the rest of your life.
This is your life now. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. What role do you think Walter was assigned?
Well, see, I'm sort of wondering, like, what sort of roles would and wouldn't be part of the...
Yeah, so, I mean, honestly, I think of the way that I think of roles, and yeah, we've been very, again, vague on, like, what does that mean, and, like, you know, I think of them somewhere in between jobs and archetypes, where kind of, I guess, peeling back the curtain a little bit here, I think the way that the stranger, like, sees everyone does fall into certain character archetypes.
Yeah.
And so, like, they can be things where, like, you know, Dex was assigned to be, you know, you're the owner of the diner, right?
Yeah.
Teachers that are human and were, like, assigned to be teachers. Like, I think we've talked about how Marley was assigned to be a human. I mean, not a human. Assigned to be a teacher, like... You know, you could be a teacher, but I also think that they're, like, this isn't something that has come up in an episode that we've talked about yet, but I think it comes up in the episode after this, so I'm okay about talking about it. We've talked about, like, bikers. I think biker might be a role that people have been put into. Like, that's not a job, but, like, they're like, yep, you're a biker. Learn how to ride a motorcycle. Join a gang.
Sure.
Like, I think it's kind of, I think it is as arbitrary as, like, whatever the stranger kind of views as quote unquote valuable enough to have as a distinct archetype or job or role for someone to have can be it. And that can be anything from, you know, you're going to be the town doctor to you're the fisherman that just sits at the lake all day.
Right. I think because one thing I think we've established both through the events of Strangers in the Wood, but also the sort of inherent game mechanics of the animal in Babes in the Wood. One sort of thing that is established is, like, Walter's intelligent. Walter's very smart. I think he's definitely been the kid that, like, in his his teachers on his, like, report card write, like, you know, he's not really applying himself. Like, he's not really
I was that kid.
You know, reaching his full potential.
Yeah.
So I think it would be something,
I might have a pitch that could be a little wild.
Okay. All right. What do you got?
What if Walter's role, assigned role, was principal?
Ooh. I really do like, because I thought of, like, I did think of, like a professor, which, like, I don't know if there is higher education in the sublime.
Bro, I have no idea. But there might be.
But I do like principal a lot. I think that actually, I think that sort of fulfills the same kind of archetype.
Right. And I think it kind of plays on the tension between you and Albert.
Oh, that's so good.
Because, like, if that's the case, like, there's a certain amount of Albert grooming you for his job. Yeah. And, like, I think the implications of, like, what is it, like, having established, like, Albert is an animal person distinct from a person turned into an animal.
Yeah.
Meaning that, like, to a certain degree, like, Albert is specifically made for this role. And for there to, like, the implications of, yeah, we made, like, the perfect person for this role, but I don't want that perfect person. I want, like, a real person to be in that role. Like, I think the implications of that is interesting.
Yeah.
And then also just, like, the way that it plays. Like, I don't, and I don't know. I mean, is that as specific as, like, the role is the principal of the Sublime School for Lost Children, or is it a different school? I don't know.
Yeah.
What do you think is more interesting?
Like, because I my initial thought is, like, it would be interesting to have, you know, Albert basically training his replacement.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I don't even know, like, if he's the perfect principal, I don't even know if that would even be a dynamic that would come up. Like, if it would even be...
Yeah, I don't even know if it is that he is the perfect principal. He is someone who's made for this job, so theoretically he should be. But, like, we've seen Albert. He's obviously not the perfect principal. Otherwise, true. There would be no one who fails.
True. Yeah, in that case, I kind of like that. I kind of like he's being trained, or he has been assigned to become the principal of the Sublime School for Lost Children.
This is wild. We haven't even played the game yet, and this is already wild. Okay, cool. Let's talk about your social life.
Yeah.
So you described it as timid and unprecedented. Expand on that, please.
I will. I think timid is kind of Walter is timid, like toward, and I think this is sort of how he was with his classmates in the real world. Even more so now, he's like, you know, he's in a new environment surrounded by new people, and like, moreover, like people that he doesn't understand, people that are very different from how people were in his world, and he is not going to be extremely outgoing towards these people. I think unprecedented comes both from this is a completely different kind of person he's around, but also like I think people are coming to him.
Interesting.
I think
Do people know that that's your role, that you're supposed to, that like you're being groomed to be the principal?
I don't think it's announced, but it's not a secret either.
Right. Like, it's like you have your specialized classes that only you go to.
Yeah.
Like most people at least have like a handful of people who with the same roles, but it's like you get to go to the special class that Principal Albert personally teaches.
Yeah. Yeah. That's pretty wild.
This is really interesting. I think this also paints a really interesting dynamic between not just like you and Albert, because like obviously, right? But like between you and the stranger.
Yeah.
Because I think there's like, we have very well established there to be some kind of like intellectual rivalry.
Yeah.
Between you and the stranger. But like, it seems like for this to be true, that means even early on, there's a certain amount of respect.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, I don't know if respect is the word here, because I truly don't know if we can frame any interaction or like any belief of another person that the stranger has as respect. But like, I feel like this is the closest we come, right?
It's acknowledgement. This person has a quality that is noteworthy.
Absolutely. That's really interesting.
Think Walter's like the only example of that happening. I think like,
yeah, no,
you know, you get other sort of qualities of people that come into the Sublime where the stranger is probably like, oh, that person's very, you know, very kind, or that person's very
right.
strong. That person's like buff as hell, whatever.
There definitely have to be like other specialized roles that very few people get.
Yeah.
That in their very nature, like imply a certain amount of acknowledgement.
Yeah.
Right. Like to get the role of the sheriff, like, right. Like you are like Edward, Edgar, God, rest in peace, Edgar.
Not rest in peace, Edgar.
See, this is my fault. Rest in peace, Hall Monitor, who is Edward.
Yes.
Got it. Yes. Edgar, the sheriff. But for Edgar to like get the job of the sheriff, like that's a specifically specialized, like not like that is a position that has authority over other people in a world that is completely controlled by one person, where like that person is being like, yes, you can also have authority in this world. And I think the principal is another one of those positions, especially the principal of this school that's like in charge of brainwashing kids. Like there's no easy way. There's like no like sugarcoating it, right? Yeah. It is a school to brainwash young minds into being complacent and living in a world that they are being forced to do what a fascist leader tells them to do.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah, I think that's really interesting. And so, like, unprecedented, when you were saying that people were coming up to you, do you think it's because of that, or just, like, in general, the people interacted with Walter strangely?
I think there's a little of both. I think, like, some people, I think there's a good chunk of people that are like, of those who know that Walter is being trained for this role, there's a group of them that kind of think like, oh, maybe I should be on this guy's good side. Maybe I should talk to this guy, see what's up. I also think that there is, like, and this is just something that I've sort of noticed playing Strangers in the Wood. There's a sort of inherent friendliness that permeates the sublime. I get the feeling that in many cases it is quite manufactured, but in other cases not. But I think because of that, I think some people like go up to Walter and just be like, "Hi, I'm so and so. Want to be friends?"
Yeah, I could totally see that. Especially like if you're like in the blue class and like some people might just have that role, right? Yeah. Of like being the friendly person. Yeah. Being the person who goes around like being the Ned Flanders of wherever they are. Like being the like howdy diddly, like how are you today? Like that might be their role. Yeah. Which is interesting to think about. So yeah, I could totally see that. Awesome. We spent a lot of time on this, but that's fine. I think this is interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting stuff. So next thing on here is to name your character. We already know the name of your character.
Walter.
It says describe them briefly. Do you want to describe what human Walter looks like? We have an image of what.
Yeah, we do.
We'll probably release it the same day that this episode comes out. Can you describe him for me?
Yeah. I have actually scrolled back in our private messages to see what I sent you for this. He's a little on the short side, and I would give an exact height, but I'm going to be honest, don't know how tall teenagers are. Don't, totally like, fair. Have no idea. Like, what is short for a 15-year-old? No idea.
I have no idea.
No idea. He has reddish brown hair that he does not take care of. It is all messy and whatnot. Mm-hmm. I've written down round face, round glasses, which is great. Mm-hmm. He is typically just always slouching. In fact, maybe he's not even short. Maybe he's average.
He's just got bad posture.
And just has bad posture, like, all the time.
He just needs to stand up a little.
Yeah, just needs to stand up a little. I wrote that he's usually wearing a jean jacket, but he's probably not, because he's probably wearing a school uniform.
That's fair.
And that's Walter.
That's Walter. You all will be able to see an image of Walter on our Twitter. Go ahead and follow at Tales Yet Told. We'll probably also release it on the Instagram. That's also Tales Yet Told. Go follow those. Just a quick plug. Yeah. Awesome. Cool. So next we have the support characters. So you're going to get two of these. It says the support player. We're kind of splitting up these roles. So like you can create one and I can create one. Or do you want to create both of them?
I think it would be cool for each of us to create one.
Okay, cool. So for each of these support characters, we're going to choose two of the descriptors from below and describe them or their relationship to the witness. So the descriptors we have are quiet, tired, X, which I think is funny. Yeah. Also gorgeous, unseeing, domineering, sympathetic, needy, strong, frenetic, kind, and connected. All of these are really interesting.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, we can... So, mechanically, the way that these are going to work, and we'll get into that a little bit more later, but essentially, these are going to be characters that help you deal with your oncoming... The oncoming horror, right? They, like, help ground you back into reality, back into the things that you care about, back into... you know, being present with your body and like kind of understanding it. But they are also at risk of being tainted by the horror through being in contact with you and trying to do that. Mm. So these are people that at one point or another, you may either actively call on them for help or they may notice you need help and then like come to you to help. But in doing so, they are putting themselves at risk of being corrupted by your presence and by the horror, more specifically by the horror's presence within you.
Okay.
Okay. Cool.
Do you want to go first?
I don't have an idea yet. Cause my first idea was actually, I was going to do the bus driver, but I think we've seen her to a degree where it's like, if she gets corrupted, I don't know what that looks like. Like, I don't know how to portray her in a way that is quote unquote uncorrupted, for that if she does get corrupted, the way we see her is the corrupted version of that. Like, yeah, I don't know what that looks like. So I think I'm more interested in creating new things here.
Yeah. I almost think, because, I mean, and I don't know how much this lines up with sort of how we've established that this transformation works.
Yeah.
But, like, ability to be corrupted by it. You know, I mean, we've been hanging out with Marley a bunch, and, like, you know, Dorothy and Dakota haven't started to turn.
Yet.
Well, okay.
the way in which they are vulnerable is by, like, being open with you and like kind of like your openness in return kind of corrupting them in a way, and in the way that I'm imagining it, at least the way that this transformation in the sublime works, I think part of it is a very physical thing, right? Because there is the physical transformation, and through what method it is incited, I think is still a little vague. I have some ideas, but I think a lot of it is also mental, in the way in which one interacts with the sublime. Because like how we've kind of talked about, like people who end up in the brown class end up going through this transformation. I truly don't think it's like a, hey, you're in the brown class, here's a shot, and they like inject you with, you know, a virus that like turns you into an animal. I think there's something very like baked into how the sublime works, and maybe even the school, that like the moment you are assigned being in the brown class, it has happened, right?
Right.
And a part of that is like, I mean, you may be assigned to the brown class and not even know it yet, right? Where it's like you're already going down that rabbit hole, and like Principal Albert needs to have a talk with you, but it's already happened. Right. And so and a lot of that goes with, you know, the way you act, the way you think, the way that you interact with people. All of that is going to be taken into account by the powers that be that are watching. And so I think a part of that might be like, if you interact with people and then they start going down the same route that you're going down, you know, that might be the thing that corrupts them.
Yeah, that's sort of what I was kind of going to bring up, is like part of the way that other people can be corrupted is by, oh, I'm associating with someone who is going against the intent of the sublime, you know, and, you know, almost by doing that, you are inherently kind of going down that path as well.
Yeah, I think that's kind of what it is.
Yeah.
Cool. And to be clear, I also don't think that the Sublime School for Lost Children is the only way in which this happens. I think people who don't go to this school, like even adults, I think can end up finding themselves slowly transformed into animals. Through what methods? I don't know. But I do know that it is a thing. So this isn't like, you know, the only way.
Cool.
Ready to get your hands dirty and stuff some creds in your pocket? Then get ready for Cyber Plus Punk Overload, the first official expansion of the award-winning sci-fi action TTRPG, Cyber Plus Punk. This game is powered by a super condensed version of John Harper's Forged in the Dark system, made specifically for action-packed one-shot sessions. Cyber Plus Punk puts you in the boots of a runner, living on the edge and stalking the shadows of a gritty, ultra-violent world full of megacorps, mercs, and pigs, all looking to f*** you over. And guess what? You've got one last run. Overload is a collection of 16 new scenarios that drop you into mega prisons, reality TV shows, time loops, badlands, and even the Netscape. Plus, you get additional add-ons, including gear catalogs, new plug-in rule sets, and complete settings, all bundled into three sleek thematic packs. Ain't that just grand? And if that's not enough, if you back Cyber Plus Punk Overload on Kickstarter, you can even get an exclusive hollow foil sleeve, making it seamless to take your game anywhere you're going. Now what the f*** are you waiting for? Go to Kickstarter now and back Cyber Plus Punk Overload. And good luck, runner. You're gonna need it.
My dearest listener, have I got a secret for you? Bitcherton is an improvised comedy podcast inspired by the stories of Jane Austen that tells the tale of a wealthy family's secrets, scandals, and shenanigans. Lady Bitcherton has unwed daughters, nosy neighbors, awful country cousins, and now a body to hide. Will the Bitchertons be able to keep their secrets off the pages of Lady Bigwither's gossip sheet? Or will her pen skewer their good name forever? Oh, Bits, what a predicament. Featuring the voices of Katie Maravich, Iffy Waddyway, Carolyn Page, Alex Songsharp, Brian Flaherty, and Cassie Wilson, plus a dance card filled with guest comedians of the very finest quality. But for us to help the seeds of rumor ripen into the juicy plum of scandal, we'll need your help. Bitcherton is heading to Kickstarter on June 13th. Go to bitcherton.com to pre-save the campaign and help us bring this story to life. Ta-ta for now.
So, creating these support characters.
Yeah.
I'm thinking... I have a suspicion that the one that you're going to make is going to be another student.
I was thinking at least one of them should be a student.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I'm trying to decide if they should both be students or if one of them should not be a student. And if in that case, like, who are they?
It could be interesting to, you know, we have these descriptors here. It could be interesting to, like, you know, very intentionally create two students who are in these.
I think I like that. I think the only other thing that I could think of that could be interesting is, like, another staff member, but, like, I don't know about that. The other one I was going to say is maybe, because... Was Walter assigned a home and a family, or do you think that if you come old enough, they're like, just live in the dorms until you...
You know, there's a certain part, element of, like, we're not gonna assign you a family for, like, for the short amount of time it's gonna take you to come into your role.
I agree. So maybe it is just two students, because I think a faculty member might be interesting, but I'm not sure. Like, it can't be Albert. I feel like
it can't be Albert.
Yeah, there's no way Albert isn't offering support in this way. Like, if Albert does not care if the horror overtakes you or not.
I also, depending on who they are, like, I don't know how corruptible a staff member would actually be.
Yeah. I mean, because it could be like they are a person that, you know, it could be a Marley situation where it's like they're a person who were assigned to be a teacher, genuinely does care about the students and wants them to find a role within the Sublime, but like, and like sees you struggling. I think that's a valid thing that could happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm gonna pull up a name generator here.
Yeah.
I'm still trying to think if that's like something that is worth, like, is that something we want to explore? Like a real person as a faculty member? I feel like we haven't really dealt with any real people who are doing their roles, you know?
Yeah.
Like we've met, I mean, other than Edward and Edgar, like we've met them, they do their roles, but
yeah.
But outside of that, like those are the only two people out of all of the characters that we've interacted with. No, Dex also. Never mind. Never mind on what I said. Forget what I said. Wrong. But I still think it's possibly an interesting avenue for us to go down and look into. I'm doing the name generator here.
Sure.
Randomization. Bam. Any good names on here? Gabe Williamson. Bryn Parker. Morgan Collins. Shay Chase. Bryn Simmons. Tanner.
Does it actually say Tanner?
Yes, it does. Tanner. That's really funny. Kai Stanley. Marley Ryan. Blake McCarthy. Cameron.
I did just have this thought. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, maybe depending on how it goes, it could explain this, but like if Walter had a like support system at this school that was a staff member, I feel like that might have been someone he would have like looked for while he was like in the school.
Yeah, cool. So yeah, so would you? Okay, I like that idea. So we can do one student and then one staff member.
Well, the problem with that is I'm saying like during Strangers in the Wood while
I get you. If there was
while they were there,
yeah.
If there was someone that he like trusted, and I don't know if he necessarily needs to trust the
yeah
person, but like you know, it kind of feels like he might have
looked out for them. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we don't want to go into it being like, well, that's a person that gets corrupted that we already know is off the table.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. What if it's Miss Jackson?
Huh.
No, she's already a parrot person.
Yeah.
Shoot. Darn.
I think it's got to be two fellow students.
Yeah.
I can't think of what else it could be that would make sense.
Yeah. How did you end up at the school? Did Edgar bring you here?
I don't think we established that, but I do like that because it gives...
We've established that Edgar took you from place to place to place after like continually like running into you, messing up stuff.
Yeah.
So I think it's probable that he brought you here.
Yeah, I think I like that. I think I like... Because it... Yeah, we had established that they had a previous rapport... I think both like before and after Walter's weaselification, they've had some run-ins, you know.
Yeah.
Some.
What if Edgar is one of them? Because I know we haven't seen, quote unquote seen him corrupted, but in the case that he does get corrupted, I already know what I would do for that.
Okay. Yeah.
And then it would change nothing.
Okay. Yeah, I love it.
Okay. I kind of like that. I like Edgar being one of them.
That's really good, yeah.
What tags are we going to use for him?
Gorgeous and...
Gorgeous.
No.
Kind?
Kind?
I would give him kind and connected.
Okay.
Maybe tired. Actually, I'm going to give kind and tired.
I kind of like tired,
Tired's really good. Okay. We just need one more. I assume this one's just a student, so you can just kind of make him up.
Yeah. Give me a name. Give me a good name.
Male, female, or neutral?
I don't care.
I don't think we've had a lot of young male character. You are the only young male character we've actually ever dealt with. So let's do...
Yeah, okay.
Elliot Rose, Finley Ellis, Charlie Baker, Lucas Jordan, Oscar Bennett, Jason McKinney, Valentin Calderon...
Jeez, that's a fancy ass name.
Yeah, right? Alvaro Gomez. Alvaro Gomez. Dustin Finch. Marshall Sloan. Thomas Dixon. Joshua O'Reilly. Harrison Hill. Lucas Cook. Davin.
Kind of like Harrison Hill.
Harrison Hill is pretty good. I like that.
It's pretty good.
Yeah. What descriptors do you want to give him?
I think.
Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have to be these. You can come up with your own as well.
Yeah. Okay. Because here's what I'm thinking for Harrison Hill. And I don't know if this is like something that we do in the game or like now, but I think I think Harrison Hill is Walter's friend.
Yeah.
I think he is a friend that Walter makes at this school.
Yeah. We can establish that now because we're supposed to establish a relationship with them. So.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Cool. I think he is unseeing.
Interesting. What does unseeing mean to you?
I think in this case, it means like when Walter is like struggling and is like, you know, going through this, he doesn't necessarily notice.
Interesting.
Unless it's like really obvious. Unless it's like.
So he's kind of oblivious.
Yeah. He's a little oblivious.
Yeah. Okay. I like that a lot.
You know what? I want to give him frenetic.
Frenetic. What does that mean to you in this way?
I think he's just very energetic. Very.
Gotcha. He's the he's the kind of like really energetic but kind of dumb friend.
Yeah. Exactly.
Got it. I like that. Really hyped to do everything, but doesn't see how much of a problem they are.
Yeah.
I like that a lot. I like that a lot. So we finally got through that. Only took us like 20 minutes. Totally fine. This might totally just get fine. Split up into two episodes, which is also fine.
Yeah.
So the first manifestation. The horror player now creates an initial manifestation for the horror. They do this by choosing two of the descriptors below. Don't describe the manifestation just yet. That'll happen when it first emerges in the second scene of the game. For now,
awesome.
Just choose its descriptors and begin brainstorming on what that means. While body horror frequently features manifestations that occur within the body of the witness, this need not be the case with each manifestation you introduce over the course of the game. Consider some shadowy external phenomena. So, for the listeners, my choices here for descriptors are metallic, meaty, voiced, puckered, attuned, non-spatial, shadowy, secreted, gummy, religious.
Wait, that's secreted.
Secreted. That makes more sense. secreted, gummy, religious, hungry, beautiful, writhing, spiny, liminal, and bloody. I'm trying to figure out what is the most interesting. Yeah, like what is the transfer? Like what's the first step of this transformation for Walter? I feel like it's a little different for everyone.
If you can work the religious tag in there, I would be so fascinated.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, right? Like what is that?
Okay.
Now that you say that, now I'm really interested in finding a way to make that work.
There's no way you could get that to work. I cannot.
I don't know, man.
He's turning into a weasel. Let me Google famous biblical weasels. Oh, hey, nothing came up.
I think, well, so here's the thing. The transformation isn't always physical, right? Sometimes it's like,
right,
have you seen true. Videodrome?
No.
So like one of.
That is like, that's one of the. Things on the like first page of the game, it says like it has a filmography section.
Yeah, I recently watched it not terribly long ago, kind of in preparation of this game. And there's a lot of non-physical parts of the transfer of the horror manifesting for the main character, mm-hmm. where it's like a lot of it's like the television being real weird and like showing images
right.
of stuff. Like that's like non-physical. Like for this, like this would probably be. Voiced and maybe I don't know, metallic, because it, you know, deals in
sure
that. But I could also see it being religious in a way where it's like, because it is focused on this fetishization of this image that he has about a specific thing, his obsession with a specific thing. Like, in this case, I don't necessarily see religious as necessarily specifically dealing with like one's religion or one's faith, but maybe more so in the obsession of iconography, you know?
Yeah.
And that, and you know, that may not necessarily be in the original intent of this game, but I think for this, like, I think a lot of this game is like, you know, we have very limited descriptors here, so like in whatever way we decide to interpret some things is gonna, you know, be more interesting than just doing it by letter of whatever the fuck it is, you know?
Right.
And so I think religious being having to deal with fetishized iconography, like what one may consider like dogma or like ritualistic practice might be religious.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
And in that case, I think I might be able to find a way to deal with religious as being the first manifestation. Actually, you know what? I think I have the perfect thing for that. I'm going to, do you want me to tell you what two descriptors I'm going to choose? And just, we'll of course describe the manifestation later, but like let you know what two things I'm choosing.
No, I want you to describe the manifestation and like after
going through it,
like maybe after the scene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Hold on. I'm going to write it down for myself. Awesome. I have made my choices. For card placement and stuff, you see all of that's already on the table. So we ain't got to deal with that, my good friend.
Right on.
So you'll see in the Roll 20, there are 4 cards here from stage 1 to stage 4. There are also 7 tokens on here. Place the 2 remaining cards face up. One of our 8. Oh, wait. Are there 8 tokens here or 7? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Okay, perfect. and place it 0 spot on the fragments reclaimed rack. Okay, that's exactly what I did. So this game is structured like this. It's going to alternate turns between the witness turns, in which the witness tries to keep their life together, and the horror turns, in which the horror tries to extend its reach. Most turns involve a short scene being played out. The horror is going to evolve over 4 stages. Awaken, spread, overwhelm, and normalize. And as it evolves, fragments are going to build up on each of the 4 stage cards. There are 2 end game triggers that cause the horror, me, to win. The first is being utterly consumed. That's when I have 7 fragments upon the cards. So as soon as I get 7 fragments on the cards overall, I win. And that means you're utterly consumed by the horror. The other way is if I get 2 fragments on the normalized stage card, then you are permanently entwined with the horror. And the witness may be able to stave off the horror and reclaim their life by slowly realizing the underlying causes and points of infection that the horror has latched onto. This is represented by a 3rd possible endgame, which is life reclaimed. That is when you have reclaimed 4 of the fragments. So essentially, to kind of very quickly summarize what happens on my turn, at the start of my turn, I'm going to roll a 4-sided die. If the die is matches one of the already unlocked stages, so let's say I have 1 unlocked, if I roll the 4-sided die and it hits a 1, I add a fragment to that card, and then I follow the instructions on the card and frame a scene. If the die face matches the next stage, so if I have 1 unlocked and I roll a 2, stage 2 is now unlocked. The player turns the card face up, I put a fragment on it, and we follow the instructions, so on and so forth. If a card already has 3 fragments on it, so let's say, you know, I roll 2 more times after that, and now it has 3 cards, 3 fragments on it, and then I roll it a 4th time, and I also get 2, instead of putting another fragment on it, I instead unlock the next stage in the sequence. So I would unlock stage 3. And if the stage doesn't match any stage, if I have 1 and 2 unlocked and I roll a 4, then I still unlock the next stage, but I don't put any fragments on it. And I don't, and I also don't get a scene. And so my turn is over. So I will be unlocking stages probably very quickly. But chances are I will be doing a lot of scenes that are in earlier stages. Right. Or like even like I may have like stages 1, 2, and 3 unlocked, but I keep rolling like a 1 or 2. So I'm doing those scenes rather than a stage 3 scene, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Reading just straight from the book here. There's a concept of play that is important to grasp for the game called bleed, where bleed refers to moments where the players begin to sincerely feel emotions for their character moments. For their character, moments when thoughts and feelings bleed between two entities. And I mention it here in order to say normalized scenes will likely erode the bleed that has been established between a player and a character, and this is by design. I don't know if that's going to happen for us because we've already played Walter. And this is also going to be a thing that you and I are going to talk about of what these end games necessarily mean, because we know that Walter transforms. And so I think the horror here is partially the transformation, but it might be something else. And that's something that we can talk about, because the ending of this game will change very little about everything that has already happened. Everything is like, we are not retconning some... I mean, we might be, but in a way that I will explain. Everything will continue to make sense. We're not changing anything fundamentally about who Walter is as a person, I don't think.
Yeah.
And so let's talk about these three end games. There is Utterly Consumed. That's when I get 7 fragments of the cards, possibly less, depending on what... You know, if you have any infected people, if we get that one together, we're going to frame and narrate a scene where the witness is wholly and utterly consumed by the horror. This might involve permanent dissociation, physical digestion, demonic possession, or something equally catastrophic. Permanently entwined, if I get 2 fragments on the normalized card, you and the horror become permanently entwined and the end game is triggered. Together, we're going to frame and narrate a scene about how the horror has integrated itself into the witness's life and body and remains there permanently. And this might involve begrudging symbiosis, oblivious parasitism, I believe.
Parasitism.
A fusing of 2 transdimensional entities or something equally strange. And then life reclaimed is, you know, you get your life back. The horror is... somehow removed from you and you are allowed to progress as normal. And so I think the implications of these are interesting, especially because we know part of this horror is that you will be transforming into a weasel. Like, we know that. And we also know by the end of this, you do turn into a weasel. That is at this point non-negotiable.
That's
And so I'll give you my thoughts on what I think the 3 of these mean, and you can give me feedback and we can kind of workshop this. And this kind of goes back to a previous discussion that you and I have had that goes into one of Walter's fears about if this change, like this change being permanent, right?
Yeah.
So I think what this means is utterly consumed means this transformation is not done for Walter. Like, yeah, you're a weasel, but it can get worse. Like, you're still technically a person and have human thoughts right now. Those can go too. And I think the broader implications of that, there are definitely people who have been utterly consumed, which also means a lot of the animals in this world were probably people at some point. Which is like, I mean, it is a thing that I have already thought of. Like, is a thing that I have already considered, like, the reality of this world. Permanently entwined, I think for us, that means it's done. The transformation is done. You know, you've become a weasel. It's not going to get worse. But I also think it means it can't get better. I think this means that whatever our end game for Strangers in the Wood is, there is no coming back for Walter. Walter is a weasel and nothing will ever change that. Like, without, like, you know, some hugely, like, world-changing thing. And like reclaimed, I think that means the transformation is done, but there is still a chance for Walter to return as a human. How do you feel about that?
I like it. Okay. I like it. It is an incentive for me to
want life reclaimed.
Yeah. Or, you know, I mean, you know, if I'm like going for a certain ending for Walter, you know, like it's an incentive to want to work towards that ending.
You know what? That's totally fair. You don't have to tell me because you don't have to tell me, but do you have an idea of what your idealized end for Walter is?
I'll tell you that
it is one of these three things.
Like it is my ideal ending for Walter is not what would happen with Utterly Consumed.
Understandable. Okay. I understand. Yeah. I think other than that, you know, do you have any questions?
I don't think so.
Okay. We open the game with the witness player framing a scene that takes place before the first manifestation reveals itself. Let this quick scene provide a glimpse at the witness's regular life prior to the invading presence of the horror. After the first scene is concluded, the horror player unlocks the first stage, Awaken, and places a fragment upon it. They follow the instructions on that card, framing a scene where the witness encounters the first manifestation while attempting to go about their life. The scene should reveal the witness's initial reaction. Is it disbelief, morbid curiosity, disgusted panic? Once these two scenes are completed, we're going to alternate between horror turns and witness turns, starting with the horror, until one of the three in-game conditions has been met. So, Gus.
Yes.
What is the scene that you think will kind of place us in the tone of what is Walter's life before the beginning of the transformation? Something that leads into it.
I think maybe the sort of moment we should explore here is because he's been in the blue class, mm-hmm. and we know that he is going to be put in the brown class.
Yeah.
And I think maybe the moment that we explore is maybe like, what was the last straw?
Ooh, okay. I like that.
And what would it have been?
Is it something you do in class? Is it something you do outside of class?
I think it's in class.
I think something that's interesting that we've kind of subtly established about Walter, or at least Walter's past, is that Walter's kind of was at least at some point kind of an asshole.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I don't know if that's something that happens before the turn. Is that, I mean, I guess that's something we're going to explore, right? But like, yeah.
Nah,
sorry.
I think he's always been a little bit of an asshole. Like that did not come from turning into a weasel.
Gotcha.
So maybe this happens in his one-on-ones with Albert.
Oh, okay.
Maybe that's where this happens.
Okay. I like that. So what okay, so yeah, let's just frame what do you think is just something that you would be learning in this specialized class on what it means to be the principal and like the kind of role, like things that you would need to know and understand in order to get that role.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Well, that's tough because I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, it could be administrative stuff. It could be dealing with students. It could be in general, like, just like, you know.
I think it's dealing with students.
Okay. I like that.
I think that, yeah. And I think Walter is like, you know, he's always been a little rebellious, mm-hmm. and I think he is now being taught one-on-one how to, you know, control rebellious children.
I like that. Okay.
And I think that doesn't sit right with him. Mm-hmm.
What about it doesn't sit right with him?
I mean, I think, like, you know, he's always been, for however long he has been in school at this point, he has been, you know, unsettled by the idea of, like, you're given a role and you have to do the role.
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe this is, like, the moment where it all sort of clicks and he's like, wait, this is like, no, this isn't, we shouldn't be like forcing these kids to take on the roles in society that we assign them.
Are you interested in playing these, like, these short scenes out to, like, get a sense of the tone of them? Or do you just want us to kind of do them in broad summary? Either is fine with me.
I think we can stick with pretty broad, just because, like, I feel like, well, I don't know, like, because I feel like Walter just, like, disagreeing with the teachings wouldn't earn him, like, okay, you're brown class now.
Yeah.
I think they're in the middle of this, like, of like, kind of arguing about it.
Mm-hmm.
And Walter just, like, goes, like, fuck you. And, like, fuck all of this.
Mm-hmm.
Straight to Albert's face. Like, just says it.
Okay. I like that a lot.
And, yeah. And I think that's what does it.
Okay.
I think that's the turning point.
What a great first scene. Lots to work with. Okay, cool. So, I think for my first scene in the manifestation of the first bit of this horror, Walter, you are at lunch later that day. You have, you know, blown off Albert, you know, said fuck you to him, left. Just happened to be like around the time, you know, that classes were ending anyway, and so like you just like fuck you, you went straight to lunch. At lunch you meet up with your friend Harrison. The two of you are in line to get you know, to get food. You go on, you know, down the lunch line. It's a pretty, I'm imagining that the lunchroom in the school is pretty standard. It has the very typical Sublime aesthetic of like vines and natural like flowers and flora and like shrubs like lining the walls and such, and like I'm imagining like the tables like aren't just like, you know, kind of cheap fake wood and like metal. It's like real hard oak wood growing out of the ground, and like all of like the, you know, lunch benches and stuff, like all natural stuff that is seemingly like growing out of this place. And the two of you are in line, you grab your trays, you're going down the line. Lunch workers are like putting food down. What do you think food is like here?
I'm picturing the kind of generic like school lunch
like
stuff,
mashed potatoes, like, peas, kind of deal.
But not like gross. Mm-hmm. Just like, you know, kind of bland maybe, but like, you know, it's not disgusting.
Yeah. As you are going down this line, you know, you go to the first person, they pour in some corn. You go to the next person, you know, they give you like some green beans, the next person, you know, mashed potatoes. And then you get to the person who's supposed to give you protein, and you're just like walking down the line with your tray and stand there and wait. And like, there's this long pause where like they don't put anything down. I don't know. Are you like looking up at them as you're going down? Or are you like looking at your tray, or, like just talking with Harrison or?
Yeah, I think he's looking at his tray. And kind of talking with Harrison.
Yeah.
And not really paying much mind to anything that's going on until something different happens.
Yeah. And I think that thing that's different is like there's a long wait. There's a long pause where there's normally the sound of like slapping of something like onto your plate, but that doesn't happen.
When that happens, when he like notices that after however long it would take to really notice that, I think he looks up then.
When you look up to see this person, it is not any of the lunch people you have seen before. In fact, it is not any person you have seen before. There's a degree to which you are not even sure if this is a person. Standing like in the space of where a lunch person should be is this large, shadowy figure maybe about 6-7 feet tall, like towering over you and like everyone around you. And it is this like empty space where you can't see through this darkness. You can't see through this void. It's like literally there is something missing in the space in front of you. And it's a little shocking at first. Like, it's like, wait, like, there's like probably like a moment where you have to be like, what? Like, where you have to try to adjust your eyes to be like, okay, what is it I'm seeing? You have you ever seen those videos of like Vanta Black? You know?
Yeah.
It's very much like that. And you're kind of staring into it as you're like kind of like trying to get a sense of what this is. It opens. Like, this void opens in such a way, like within the nothing, an eye opens. This large, white, glossy eye opens and looks at you. And then a couple of more eyes open and all like around this like void, and like not like all of them like directionally facing at you, as if that this empty space takes up 3D space and like the eyes are around it, and like from the positions that they're in, like kind of move in the way to like side eye you in a way where all of the eyes are looking at you. Mm. What is Walter's reaction?
I think he drops his tray. Mm-hmm. And I think he steps back and in a panic and doesn't look away, but can't look away almost. He just like backs away and keeps backing until he, you know, runs into something, I guess.
Yeah, I think like as you like drop it and like just like slowly back away, you think you hear Harrison calling you, but like sound feels muffled, where it's like you're so yeah. incredibly focused, like you almost were put immediately into fight or flight, whatever. Your adrenaline starts pumping. There's something about seeing this entity that is deeply troubling and at the same time like awesome, in the like traditional sense of awesome, where it is
right.
full of awe, or I guess that would be awful, but you get what I'm saying, where it's like yeah. this is a tremendously affecting experience, but I don't know if Walter knows what to make of it other than that it's incredibly impactful and terrifying yeah. in some way. I think you back into Principal Albert, who like came into the lunchroom to like see if he can find you and has like been calling you, but like you don't hear him because you're just so focused yeah. in on this thing, and you like back into him and like I think that snaps you out of it, and you like turn to look at you, and he's yeah. like, Mr. Brookstone, you and I need to have a word in my office.
I think Walter doesn't even say anything. I think he just nods.
Okay. I think that's a good place to end that scene. Just so you know, yeah. the first manifestation I chose was religious and shadowy.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah it is.
Awesome.
Be gay.
Roll dice.
An LGBTQIA actual play podcast network.